Well, it's great to be here. We are from South Africa, so we're African Americans, as you can tell. Doesn't go very well over in the U.S. We have been married coming up on 45 years, and we have 6 kids, all married, and we have 21 grandkids. Yep, we have a good return on our investment. Of the 17 grandchildren, of the 21, 17 are girls, 4 are boys, and only one has my name. His name is Jackson. Pray for that dude. Every time I see him, I go, Jackson, he goes, I know, Pop, it's on me, it's on me. And we've had quite the journey of just doing life together. But I will tell you that when I became a Christian at 17, I knew I wanted to go into ministry pretty quickly. But I was an orphan. And I don't know if you know this, but orphans produce other orphans. And I was an orphan leader, and I was very, very good. I was good at it. I was doing the dance to get the hug for God and for people. And I was doing a lot of stuff for God. In YWAM, we get to speak to people, all young people all over the world, and they come and they're so excited, such passion. You know, I'm going to do great things for God. And I'm like, oh, honey. In the south of the United States, you'd say, oh, bless your heart. If you hear that, don't take it as a compliment. It means you're an idiot. Okay? God does not want us doing anything for him at all. He wants us to do stuff with him. He's a with God, not a for God. But I was doing stuff for God, doing the dance to get the hug, and all of my worth was based on what other people did for me and through me and the numbers that we had, and I was running a race with no finish line. And suddenly I got to my mid-30s, and I don't know why in your mid-30s you have to deal. Stuff just, your coping mechanisms wear out, and you have to kind of go deep and hug the cactus, I would call it. And look at yourself and allow God to love you in the places where you have not wanted him to be. Because I want him to love me, but I don't want to be rejected and hurt again. And so I had this wall to God and to others and to myself. And in my mid-30s, I started this long road and journey of starting healing and allowing God to love me. Just love me. The kind of love that has no because. He just whispers, I love you, and there's no because I love you. I just love you, and it started to bring freedom to my heart. And free people. And in that journey, I found myself getting my heart back again. And I'm still now at 66 getting my heart back again. The Father is constantly reintroducing himself to me, starting in my mid-30s, saying, this is the Father that I am. Whatever you're projecting from your own woundedness, that's not who I am. This is who I am. And as he introduced himself to me, I not only saw who he was, I started to see and discover who I was. Thomas Merton says, the more you see the true Father, the more you see your true self. The more you celebrate the true Father, the more you celebrate your true self. I was finding myself in him, getting my heart back, and my life just started to change, and I started walking as a son and as a father. And as a father and a leader and a shepherd, I could pass on DNA. Whereas an orphan, I was just producing other orphans. And in that journey of getting my heart back, God did some important things, not just in our marriage, but in my life with him that continues to this day, and I'm still in the journey. What I share this morning, I know just enough to be dangerous. I'm in journey with you, with a God that's very present. And when you have this reintroduction with who the Father is, and you see and experience this kind of joy, this kind of joy that comes from love, it helps when you go through seasons where it looks like your garden has been trampled. It looks like things are not going really well. I don't know, this morning, you know, Mike started out, just pray for people that might be going through a rough go. What I'd like you to do for just a moment, just 30 seconds, each one of you, turn to the person on your left and right. And answer this question. If tonight when you go to sleep, While you're sleeping, a miracle takes place. When you wake up in the morning, how would you know? What changed? What miracle took place in the morning that you would notice? What is the miracle you want to take place in the night while you sleep tonight? Just turn to the person your left and right, 30 seconds, tell them, what's the miracle you want to wake up to? I can tell you the miracle I want to wake up to. Of our 17 granddaughters, we have two granddaughters that are struggling with life-threatening health issues. One is Pippa. Pippa is now 8. She's been battling an inoperable brain tumor since she was, before she was 2. The tumor has started to grow again. She had headaches when we were there just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and she's in a battle. A miracle would be if that tumor was completely gone. We have another granddaughter who's 2. Her name is Ruby. She was born with kidneys that don't work. And when she was 1.5, she had a kidney transplant from our daughter. And a miracle for me would be if I woke up in the morning and she had new kidneys and they were working whole. I believe that. And now, as I'm walking through life and this journey with my grandchildren, I wonder, am I in a faith crisis or am I in a trust crisis? I don't think I'm so much in a faith crisis, but you know, when you're going through things like this, or you're going through your own health issues or whatever you're going through in life, people love to share verses with you, especially if you're a pastor. Man, they throw verses at you, and I just honestly tell you, sometimes they make you more sick. I don't want to hear another verse. I don't want to be fixed. But someone shared this verse with me in Proverbs 20:24. In the Living, it says this: since the Lord is directing your paths, why then try and understand everything that happens along the way? I don't know about you, the more I try to understand is an indication I don't trust, and the more I trust, I don't need to know everything he's doing along the way. Let me just tell you, I hate verses like that. I want to know. I want to know what's going on. I want to know what is happening. And what I've found is that I'm in this almost trust crisis again, where God has to reintroduce himself to me in the places where I might be projecting something onto him that really isn't who he is. The way I would put it is this: I love to travel. And on a map, if you look on a map, there's a place called Antarctica. Okay, some dude was there. And it's on the map, so it must be real. So I have a faith, I believe that Antarctica exists. Okay, I've never been there though, but I believe it exists. My hope is one day I'll put my feet on Antarctica. What is going to be my vehicle to get me from my faith to my hope? Can't be doctors. It'll only take me so far. Can't be medical breakthroughs, although I would love that. It can't be financial, just financial overflow that takes care of everything, although that's helpful. I have found that it has to be joy. In Nehemiah 8:10, it says, the joy of the Lord will be our strength. That means we'll only be as strong as our joy. But it's the joy of the Lord. It's not our joy. It's another kind of joy. It's the joy that comes from John 15:11. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. Whatever Jesus is joyful about is in us. If you want to know what joy looks like, look at the life of Jesus. Whatever brings him joy, that's in us. We can partake in that. Jesus is saying, listen, the reason your joy can now be as full as it is and moving toward that celebration of union with me, because you are connected to me, the vine and the branches. In that passage, the commanding metaphor of vine and branches, you no longer enjoy merely your joy. Now you have my joy. And you can enjoy what I enjoy as your joy because you abide in me. And I found that I need to abide in God in new and more curious and amazing ways in a journey that I don't get and I don't understand. Listen, the more I know about God, the more I don't. I do, I feel more stupid. It's like I discover one thing and then I realize somebody else already discovered that and I think I'm really new at it. And then I'm discovering more about God and more of myself. Even heaven is not a destination. It is the ongoing journey where I am going to continue to get to know him and see him and know and see myself. I love it's not a destination. But what is it going to be for me and what does it look like to have joy in a journey? If you have a moment, turn with me to to Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, beginning with verse 21. I'm going to read from the New NIV. Sorry if it's not your approved interpretation. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she said, "If I touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and you can ask, 'Who touched me?'" They're like, "Everybody touched you." But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, told him the whole story, the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. When I read passages of like this, and I get kind of a reintroduction to who the Father is and who Jesus is, because if you want to see the Father, look at Jesus. He says, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." Well, in this story, in this parable, he talks about Jairus. Now, Jairus comes at his knees. Isn't it interesting that even before this, lepers and blind and whatever, they come on their knees. There's something about a posture of desperation when you come on your knees and you've exhausted everything and you finally come to Jesus and say, "Man, you're my only hope." So Jairus has a reputation that he's giving up here. And the synagogue is against this new prophetic healing teacher. Yet he is desperate because his little girl is dying. And I want you to know, when you have a little girl or a little child that's struggling, you will do everything and anything to go get life where you can get it. And this Jairus, he didn't come at 3 a.m. He came in the afternoon. Everybody saw him on his knees saying, "My little girl's dying." And Jesus said, "Let's go." Now, I think the disciples are excited. They're going to get some credibility here. We're going to like the synagogue leader's house. And on their way to this resurrection, they're interrupted by a woman. I think that this is such a God thing. My life got interrupted by a woman 45 years ago, and I have been blessed ever since. But I want to just leave the woman for a minute. Don't think I'm passing her over, but I want to get to this processional and the stuff that's happening here. So as they're going, suddenly they get to the house and there's a commotion, right? She apparently has died, because by Jewish tradition, and especially Jairus being a leader of the synagogue, he knows that you have to hire wailers and mourners, professionals, that will be outside your house wailing and mourning the celebration of the life of the one who's just passed. So just the fact that they're outside wailing and they've been hired, it's a confirmation the little girl has died. But to even bring it further, Jesus sees the commotion and says, why all this commotion and noise? She's not dead, she's just sleeping. And then they laugh. Man, never think you can outdo Jesus. He's sneaky Jehovah. Why in the world would he do that? Because the minute they laugh, they also confirm she's dead. So when she comes out, they can't say she was sleeping. Oh, the guy's good, eh? Jesus is sneaky. So they go in, and he takes her by the hand and says, Talitha cum, arise. Little girl, arise. I want you to know, in the journey of getting from my faith to my hope and the joy, and that journey in the middle of becoming actually more human in my new creation in Christ, as I'm introduced to who the Father really is, there's something in this picture of resurrection that Mike hinted to earlier that's so powerful. When he said to that little girl, arise, it was an aroma and picture of his resurrection. And his resurrection in his aroma and a picture of our resurrection. So when he said, arise, it was pointing to his and his to ours. And that goes back to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, where it says Jesus is the first fruits of the resurrection. And after him, there will be what? Another resurrection. The second will come. And that comes from the harvest, or the celebration of first fruits in the Old Testament. See, that meant this. First fruits, the celebration in the Old Testament is you plant a seed, skip it, plant a seed, skip it, plant a seed, skip it, plant a seed. Then 6 weeks later, you plant a seed in the places that you missed. And then they'd wait. And they'd wait for that first harvest to come. And when that first harvest came, they would harvest it. Then they would give it to the priest, and the priest would break it down and mill it. And they would bake bread, and that aroma would fill the valley. And that aroma was a scent to those farmers that they gave the first fruits, and the second harvest will come. That's hope. That is a hope. In the midst of what we don't get and don't understand, I want you to hear this. One day, we will also hear, arise. In the middle of our trampledness and the things that have just beat us up the most, life is this cyclical thing of life and death and burial and resurrection. And somewhere in that, we need to hear the message that also one day we will hear this, arise. That we also are a part of this beautiful story. There's a guy I got the privilege to meet once. You probably heard of him, Tony Campolo. He was a small, white, bald guy, okay? And I didn't mean you. I was just looking at you when I said it. I mean, Shiki Baba, I bless you. All of a sudden, it's like, small, bald guy. Yeah, that guy. I love you. You're going to be my new favorite friend. And he goes to an all-black church. And I don't know if you know this, but if you go to an all-black church, like I met my friends from Africa, from Zimbabwe, yes! And when you go to a black church, you know you're in a black church if you're preaching. They ain't sitting there like a bunch of white people. They're interacting. If you don't have a dance train in our church in South Africa, when we go in the community, something's wrong, right? And we don't wait for one message. We preach until he comes, until he lands. We're not like, there's a rugby match happened. No, we're waiting. So he's preaching at a black church, and if you're at one, they'd let you know how it's going right away. You'll start to hear, amen, amen. And then you get back a little farther, maybe a little older. Preach it, brother, preach it. And then you really know you're hitting it when you start to hear the old folks and the silverheads in the back, and all of a sudden somebody says, watch yourself. I mean, they just really love, they get into it. Likewise, when you're not doing well, they let you know too. One time he was preaching and he was suffering. And all of a sudden, this old lady stood up in the middle of the church and said, help him, Jesus! Man, they're in. This one time he was preaching. He's going to preach first, then the old pastor. So he preaches this message and he's fiery and he's going for it. And at the end, man, they stood up and they're clapping. They love that little white guy. And they're excited, and then they sit down, the choir does an anthem, and then Tony turns to the old black preacher, taps him on the knee and says, top that. I'm telling you, you should never threaten an old black preacher. It will not go good for you. And it started something like this. It's Friday. And my Jesus is on that cross. And the demons have thought they have won, but they don't know. It's just Friday, and Sundays are coming. It's Friday, and my Jesus is on that cross. And the disciples are going back to their nets. The women are weeping, but they don't know. They don't know. It's just Friday, and Sundays are coming. Help me out, white people. Come on. It's Friday. And the soldiers are bartering for the only clothes my Jesus has on this earth. But they don't know. They don't know. He said, just a Friday. And Sundays are coming. I want to declare today that it is just Friday and Sunday is coming. It's just Friday and Sunday is coming. And somewhere there is a joy in the journey that carries us from our faith to our hope. And it's a joy that Friday is not going to last forever, but that also there can be joy in Friday, even in our suffering and the things we don't understand or get. And I found there are kind of two kinds of people. Well, three kinds of people in Friday. I'll land on one. Sometimes I just run into people that are only Friday people. You ever been around them? Guys, they suck the life right out of you. They're down all the time. Oh, how's it going? Oh, yeah, you know. They're like Eeyore. I mean, they're the prophets of doom. How's it going? They just won the lottery. Yeah, I'm going to lose it tomorrow. They're like a bad country western song. Everything bad happens. Wife leaves, dog leaves, house burns down. There's nothing good in Friday, and that's all they see. And let me tell you, if you find joy in every little thing will find joy in you. We'll find what we're looking for. So that there are people in Friday. You got to be careful who you're around when you're going through a Friday. Then you got Sunday-only people. Oh, gosh, they can make you just as sick. They're happy about everything. I mean, it's like, oh, you're going through the worst time. You just shared everything, the worst medical thing, whatever's happened to your family. And they're like, you know what? Oh, man. To all those who loved him according to his purpose, it'll work out. You know, they're just joyful and happy. And they say stuff. And I just want to shoot them. I can't say that in this world. It's just, they're not living in the reality. But there are the people that, it's Friday and Sunday's coming. And that's where I think the message of the woman is so powerful. You see, that little girl passed while he was on the way, but the reason she possibly passed is because he got interrupted by the woman. But it wasn't an interruption to him. And the crowd is all around, right? And she comes desperate, says, if I touch him, I'll be healed. And she was healed. And that word there is physical healing. She was physically healed. And the thing about this is that he's not a good Jewish single Messiah, by the way. He's allowing people to touch him. He's touching a dead body. He's doing stuff that are not legal. But he does it anyway. I mean, the first person he tells he's the Messiah is a woman at the well, a Samaritan who's single. He's not a good Jewish single Messiah. He's breaking all the rules. But I love it. He's scandalously good. And in this, when a priest is touched by someone unclean, they're both unclean, and they got to go to the temple, go through the rites of cleansing and all that. But with Jesus and with the new royal priesthood that Peter talks about, when unclean touches clean, both are made clean. Man, that's a whole new economy. That's not about religion. It's about relationship and walking with him and not doing stuff for him. It just changes the whole ball game. And then he said, who touched me? I want you to know when the desperate reach out and touch him, I believe that power is released every time. I don't know what it looks like, but desperate people get his attention. And the interesting thing is when he speaks this, who touched me, she comes forth and he says, your faith has made you well. But he used a different word. He used a different word there, sotza, which means this. She just didn't need the healing of her physical body. She needed the healing of her emotions. She was ostracized. She was unloved, untouchable, unapproachable. For 12 years, no one could sit with her at a table, at a picnic bench. She needed the healing of her heart. That's the Jesus I know that restores dignity and makes us more human in the journey. So what is it somewhere between Friday and Sunday that has been helpful for me and maybe for you as we close? I think of what Henry Nouwen said. He's a great desert father, by the way. He said, joy is the experience of knowing that we are unconditionally loved and that nothing, not sickness, failure, emotional distress, oppression, war, or even death can take that away. You know how I experience joy? When I am released to let him love me and I love him. Love releases joy into a moment. That kind of joy cannot be touched by circumstance. But his joy can change circumstance. This is a love that has no because. So three things that hit me. In Africa, we say the vibe of your heart determines your tribe. Be around joyful people when you're in a deep, dark Friday. Be around people of joy, people of life, speaking life. It's like the synagogue ruler. He realized whatever he was preaching, whatever he was doing, he wasn't getting life and healing there. So he was going to go to where he heard life and healing was taking place. He's going to go find Jesus, no matter what he's giving up. The other is this, a little bit tougher. Leave room for the but if not. That's a tough one, but it builds trust in my joy of the Lord for me, not something I produce. Do you know what that looks like? It's like Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. Our God is able to deliver us, faith. Our God will deliver us, hope. But if not, we're not going to bow down. And but if not does not mean I give up on his ableness and his willingness to heal. But if not says this, you are the blessed controller of all things. And I want to trust you more than my understanding. I need to trust you and to walk in this place of hope in the trampledness of whatever the garden looks like in Friday. Jesus, same thing. God, Father, let this cup pass from me. In Father, he's expressing faith in the one who he knows can do it. And I'm asking that my hope is you let this cup pass from me. But if not is not a cop-out to our prayers or to our desperation that I have for Pip and for Ruby. I'm going to ask everything and everything, anything and everything, and leave all the results to him. because I'm challenged. Do I want him more than their healing? Do I want him more than my dreams? More than provision? More than anything itself, do I want him more? I'm in that place. And I want to lead people out of the desert, but I can't lead them out if I haven't been there. The other is this: celebrate others' miracles on the way to yours. You might have a long 12 years and a long time. Celebrate others on the way to yours. Because nothing destroys joy or robs it more than comparison. Celebrate others on the way to your miracle. So this morning, I don't know where you are on your Friday. I don't know what your journey has been, but I do know that he knows, and he is present. He never abandons us. And this morning, if you feel like it's been a long Friday, and you've taken some hits, and you're just trying to get your heart back, and challenged, how do I trust him in the things I don't get or I don't understand? I'm going to encourage you to step into a moment. If you're here this morning with me and say, man, I'm in a long Friday and I need a touch from the Father. Maybe I need him to reintroduce himself. Maybe I need to step into that brokenness and say, this is where I'm at. And Father, I need a touch. I need healing. I need hope. I need joy so that I can have the strength to endure, because that's what Jesus said. For the joy set before me, I endured. That joy gives us endurance.